Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions, and you're listening to Briefings Direct. Today we present a sponsored podcast discussion on how data center consolidation and modernization of IT systems helps enterprises reduce cost, cut labor, slash energy use, and become more agile. We'll look at the business and technical cases for reducing the numbers of enterprise data centers. Infrastructure advancement, standardization, performance density, and network services efficiencies are all allowing for bigger and fewer data centers that can carry more of the total IT requirements load. These strategically architected and located facilities offer the ability to seek out best long-term outcomes for both performance and cost, a very attractive combination nowadays. But to gain the big payoffs from fewer, bigger, better data centers, the essential list of user expectations for performance and IT requirements for reliability need to be maintained and even improved. Network services and internet performance management need to be brought to bear, along with the latest data center advancements, technically themselves, to produce the full desired effect of top-notch applications and data delivery to an enterprise's consumers, partners, and employees. Here to help us better understand how to get the best of all worlds, that is high performance and lower total costs from data center consolidation, we're joined by our panel. Please join me in welcoming James Staton, Principal Analyst at Forrester Research. Welcome, James.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Andy Rubinson, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Akamai Technologies. Welcome, Andy.
Great. Thank you, Dana. Looking forward to it.
And Tom Winston, Vice President of Global Technical Operations at Phase Forward, a provider of integrated data management solutions for clinical trials, and drug safety based in Waltham, Massachusetts. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, Dana. Thanks very much.
Let me start off with James. Let's look at the general rationale for data center modernization and consolidation. What are the business, technical, and productivity rationales for doing this?
Well, there's a variety of them, and they typically fall down to cost. So oftentimes, the biggest reason to do this is because you've got sprawl in the data center, you're running out of power drops, you're running out of the ability to cool any more equipment, and you're running out of the ability to add new servers as your business demands them. And if there's new applications the business wants to roll out and you can't bring them to market, that's a significant problem. And this is something the organizations have been facing for quite some time. And as a result, if they can start consolidating, they can start moving some of these workloads onto fewer systems, which allows them to reduce the amount of equipment they have to manage, the amount of software licenses they have to maintain, lower their support costs, and in the data center overall, they can lower their energy costs by reducing some of the cooling required and getting rid of some of those power drops.
James, isn't this sort of the equivalent of Moore's Law, but instead of at the silicon clock speed level at a higher infrastructure abstraction, are we virtualizing our way into a sort of a new Moore's Law era?
Potentially. I mean, we've always sort of had this gap. There's always been a gap between how much performance a new CPU or a new server could provide and how much performance an application could take advantage of. And it's partly a factor of how we've designed applications, but more importantly, it's a factor of the fact that we as human beings can only consume so much at so fast a rate. And so for most applications, they actually end up consuming on average only 15 to 20% of the server. And if that's the case, you got an awful lot of headroom to put other applications on there. And we were isolating applications on their own physical systems so that they'd be protected from any faults or problems with other applications that might be on the same system and take them down. And virtualization is the primary isolating technology that allows us to do that with isolation.
Now, I suppose there are some other industry, IT industry types of effects here. I'm thinking about how in the past we would have had entirely different platforms and technologies to support different types of applications or networks or storage or perhaps telecommunications. It seems as if more and more of what we consider to be technical services can be supported by a common infrastructure. Is that also at work here?
Yeah, that's mostly happening as well. I mean, we still have exceptions to that rule. There's definitely applications that just can't possibly get enough compute power, nor can they get enough contiguous compute power, and that creates the opportunity for unique products in the market. But more and more applications are being broken down into modules, and much like the web services and the web applications that we see today, they're broken into tiers, individual logic runs on its own engine, and all of that can be spread across a more commoditized, consistent infrastructure. And we're learning these lessons from the dot-coms of the world and now the cloud computing providers of the world and applying them to the enterprise.
And I've heard quite a few numbers, I have to say, across a very wide spectrum in terms of the types of payoffs that you can get in terms of consolidating and modernizing your infrastructure, your data centers. Are there any rules of thumb that are typical types of paybacks, either in some sort of a technical metric or an economic metric?
Sure. Well, a wide range is attributed to the fact that the benefits come from how bad off you are when you begin and how dramatically you consolidate. On average, across all the enterprises we've spoken to, you can realistically expect to see about a 20% cost reduction from doing this. But just as you said, you know, if you've got a 5,000 servers and they're all running at 5% utilization, there's big gains to be had.
And the economic payoffs nowadays, of course, most important. I suppose there's a twofold effect as well. If you have to, you're facing a capacity issue and you're thinking about spending $40 or $50 million for an additional data center, if you can reduce the need to do that or postpone it, you're saving on your capital costs. At the same time, you could perhaps, through better utilization, reduce your operating costs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the biggest benefits you get from virtualization is you get flexibility. It is so much easier to patch a workload and simply keep it running while you're doing that. Move it to another system, apply the patch, make sure the patch worked, and then deploy a clone, and then turn off the old version. That's much more powerful, and it gives a lot more flexibility to IT shop to maintain higher SLAs, to keep the business up and running, to roll out new things faster, and be able to roll them back more easily.
Andy Rumitson, this certainly sounds like a no-brainer. Get better performance for less money, postpone large capital expenditures. What perhaps are some of the risks that come into play while we're starting to look at this whole picture? I'm interested in what's holding people back.
So, you know, what I focus on is mainly delivery over the Internet. So, you know, there are definitely some challenges if you're talking about using the Internet with your data center infrastructure, things like the performance latency, availability challenges from cable cuts and things of that nature, as well as security threats on the Internet. So it's thinking about, you know, how can you do this? How can you deliver to a global user base with your data center without having to necessarily build out data centers internationally to be able to do that from a consolidated standpoint.
Right. So for those organizations that are not just going to be focused on employees, or if they are, they're a global organization, they need to be thinking the most wide area network possible, right?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to our practitioner, Tom Winston. Tom, what sort of effects were you dealing with at Phase 4 when you were looking at planning and strategy around data center location, capacity, and utilization?
Sure. We were in a somewhat different position in that we were actually an early adopter of virtualization technology and certainly had seen the benefits of using that to help contain our data center sprawl, if you will. But we were also growing extremely rapidly. When I joined the organization, had two different data centers, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, and we were facing the challenge of potentially having to expand into a European data center and even potentially a Pacific Rim data center. By continuing to expand our virtualization efforts, as well as to leverage some of the technologies that Andy just mentioned as far as internet acceleration via some of the Akamai technologies, we were able to forego that data center expansion. In fact, we were able to consolidate our data center to one East Coast data center, which is now our primary hosting center for all of our applications. So it had a very significant impact for us being able to leverage both, you know, that WAN acceleration as well as, you know, virtualization within our own four walls of the data center.
Uh-huh. And Tom, just for the edification of our listeners, tell us a little bit about Phase Forward and where are your users or where do your applications need to go in order for you
sure.
to be successful?
Yeah, so we run electronic data capture software and pharmacovigilance software for the largest pharmaceutical and clinical device makers in the world, and they're truly global organizations in nature. So we have users throughout the world with more and more heavy population coming out of the Asia-Pac area. So we have a very large, diverse user base that is accessing our applications 24/7, 365. And as a result, we have performance needs all the time for all of our users. And again, in an age where, as James mentioned, people are expecting things to be moving extremely quickly and always available, it's very important for us to be able to provide that application all the time and have it to perform at a very high level. And as one of the things James mentioned from an IT perspective is to being able to manage that virtual stack, another thing that virtualization allows us to do is to provide that stack and to improve performance very quickly. We can quickly add additional compute resources into that in virtual environment very quickly to scale to the needs that our users may have.
All right. James Staton, back to you. Based on Tom's perspective of the combination of that virtualization and the elasticity that he gets from his the data center and the ability to locate it flexibly, thanks to some network optimization and reliability issues, how important is it for companies now when they think about data center consolidation to be flexible in terms of where they can locate?
Well, it's important that they recognize that their users are no longer all in the same headquarters. Their users are all over the place, whether they're an internal employee, a customer, a business partner, wherever. They need to get access to those applications, and they have a performance expectation that's been set by the Internet. They expect whatever applications they're interacting with will have that sort of local feel. And that's what you have to be careful about in your planning of consolidation, because you can consolidate branch offices, you can consolidate down to fewer data centers, and in doing so, you gain a lot of operational efficiencies, but you can potentially sacrifice performance. And so you have to take the lessons that have been learned by the people who set the performance bar, by the providers of internet-based services, and see how is it that I can optimize the WAN, how is it that I can push out content, how is it that I can leverage solutions and networks that have this kind of intelligence to allow me to deliver that same performance level. And that's really the key thing that you have to keep in mind. Consolidation's great, but it can't be at the sacrifice of the user experience.
And when you find the means to deliver that user experience, that frees you up to then place your data centers strategically based on things like skills or energy availability or tax breaks and so forth. I mean, isn't that yet another economic incentive here?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to have fewer data centers, but they have to be in the right location, and the right location has to be optimized for a variety of factors. It has to be optimized for where the appropriate skill sets are, just as you described. It has to be optimized for the geographic constraints that you may be under. You may be doing business in a country in which all of the citizen information of the people who live in that country must reside in that country. If that's the case, you don't necessarily have to own a data center there, but you absolutely have to have a presence there.
All right, Andy, back to you. What are some of the pros and cons for this internet delivery of these applications? Tell us a little bit about the positive, but I suppose you have to perhaps re-architect in order to take advantage of this as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think there are two main areas that I think from the positives, the benefits, and that's the cost efficiency of delivering over the internet, as well as the responsiveness. So, you know, from the cost perspective, you know, we're able to eliminate unnecessary hardware. We're able to take some of that load off of the servers and do it do the work in the cloud, so to speak, which also helps reduce bandwidth. So there are a lot of cost efficiencies that we get. Even you know as you look to Tom's statement about being able to actually eliminate a data center and avoid having to build out a new data center. Those are all huge areas where it can help to use the internet rather than having to build out your own infrastructure. Also, you know, in terms of responsiveness, by using the internet, you can deploy a lot more quickly. So as Tom explained, it's able to reach the users across the globe while still consolidating its infrastructure, and be able to do that effectively. So this is really important, as we've seen more and more users that are going outside of the corporate WAN. So people are connecting to, say, suppliers, to partners and customers, to do all sorts of things now. The private WAN that many people are delivering their apps over are now really not effective in reaching those people.
Hmm. And as James said earlier, we've got different workloads, different types of applications. Help me understand what Akamai can do. Do you just accelerate a web app, or is there a bit more in your quiver in terms of dealing with different types of loads of media, content, application types?
So there are a variety of things that we're able to deliver over the internet. So it includes both web and IP-based applications. So if it's whether it's HTTP, HTTPS, or just anything that's carried over TCP/IP, we're able to accelerate. We also do streaming. I think one of the things to consider here is that we actually have a global network of servers that's kind of makes up the cloud, or is an overlay to the cloud that is helping to not only deliver the content more quickly, but also using some caching technology and other things that make it more efficient, allows us to give that same type of performance, availability, and security that you would get from having a private WAN, but doing it over the much less expensive internet.
Right, and you're looking at specifics of an application in terms of what's going to be delivered at frequent levels versus more infrequent levels, and you can cache the data down and gain the efficiencies of that local data store. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think the key thing to remember, a lot of folks think about Akamai as being a CDN or content delivery network, and that is true. So there is caching that we're doing, but the other key area where we add benefit is through the delivery of dynamic data. So by optimizing the cloud, we're able to speed the delivery of information from the origin as well. So that's where it's benefiting folks like Tom, where he's able to not only cache information, but the information that is dynamic that needs to get back from the data center goes more quickly.
Well, let's check in with Tom. Tom, how has that worked out for you? What sort of applications do you use with wide area optimization, and what's been your experience?
Yep, our primary application, our flagship application, a product called Inform, which is the main EDC product, or electronic data capture product that our customers use across the internet, is accelerated using Akamai technology, and almost 100% of our content is dynamic. It's worked extremely well. Prior to our deployment of Akamai, we had a number of concerns from a performance standpoint. As James mentioned, as you begin to virtualize, you also have to be very conscious of the potential performance hits. And certainly one of the areas that we were constrained with was, performance around the globe. So we had users in China that just simply due to the amount of traffic that had to traverse the globe were not happy with the performance of the application. And specifically, we brought in Akamai to start at a very targeted group of users to be able to accelerate for them the application in that region. It literally cut the problem right out. It solved it almost immediately. And at that point, we then began to spread the rest of that application acceleration product across the rest of our domains, and to continue to use that throughout the product set. So it was extremely successful for us and helped solve performance issues that our end users were having. I think it's very important, some of the comments that James made. We do live in a world that everybody expects every application across the internet to perform, like Google. You run a search and you expect it to be back in seconds. And if it's not, people tend to be unhappy with the performance of the application. In our application, it's a much more complex application. A lot more is going on behind the scenes, database calls, whatever it may be. And, having an application perform to a level of a Google is something that our end users expect it to be. even though obviously it's a much different application in what it's attempting to solve and what it's attempting to do. So the benefits that we were able to get from the acceleration service were very critical for us.
And yeah, and just to add to that, this is Andy. You know, we recently commissioned a study with Forrester looking at that, what is that tolerance threshold. And in the past, it had been about 4 seconds that people had the tolerance. It's now, as of this latest study, down to 2 seconds. That's for business to consumer, B2C users. And what we've seen, at least, is that the B2B users are even more intolerant of waiting for things. So, you know, it really has gotten down to a point where you need that immediate delivery in order to drive the usage of the tools that are out there.
Yeah, I suppose that's just human nature. You know, we our expectations keep going up. They usually don't go down. All right.
True.
Back to you, Tom. Tell me a little bit more about this application. Is this a rich internet application? Is this strictly a web interface? Tell us a little bit more about what the technical challenge was in terms of making folks in China get the same experience as those on the East Coast that were a mile away from your data center.
Sure. So the application is one that has a web front end, but all of the information is being sent back to an Oracle database on the back end. So literally every button click that you make is making some type of database query or some type of database call, as I mentioned, with almost zero static content. So everything is dynamic. There's a heavy amount of data that has to go back and forth between the end user and the application. And as a result, as I mentioned prior to acceleration, that's very challenging when you're trying to go halfway around the globe. So it was almost immediate for us to see the benefits by being able to hop onto the Akamai global network and to cut out a number of the steps across the internet that we had to, you know, traverse from one point to our data center.
Yeah, so clearly an important business metric, getting your far-flung customers happy with their response times. How did that, however, translate back when you perhaps reverse-engineered from the experience to what your requirements would be within that data center? Was there a sort of meeting of the minds between now what you understand the network is capable of with what then you had to deliver through your actual servers and infrastructure? I guess I'm looking for an efficiency metric or response in terms of what the consolidation benefit was.
So again, as I mentioned, we had already consolidated from a virtualization standpoint within the four walls of the data center, right? So we were continuing to expand in that footprint. But again, what it allowed us to do was forego having to put a data center in the PAC RIM or to put a data center in Europe to put the application closer to the end user.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's look to the future a little bit. James, when people think nowadays about cloud computing, and of course that's a very nebulous discussion and topic set, but it seems as if what we're talking about here is that more enterprises are going to have to themselves start behaving like what people think of as a cloud.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, there's obviously a positive aspect of cloud and one that can potentially be a negative. One is, you know, operating like a cloud is really operating in this more homogeneous, virtualized, abstracted world that we call server virtualization in most enterprises. You want to operate in this mode so that you can be flexible and you can put applications where they need to be and so forth. But one of the things that cloud computing does not deliver is if you run it in the cloud, you're not suddenly in all geographies. You're just in a shared data center somewhere in the United States or somewhere in your geography. If you want to be global, you still have to be global in the same sense that you were previously.
Absolutely. To James' point, just by putting yourself in the cloud does not mean that you're not going to have the same type of latency issues delivering over the internet. Same thing with availability in trying to reach folks that are far away from that hosted data center. So the cloud isn't necessarily the answer. It's not a pill that you can take to fix that issue.
You know, and Andy, I don't think you can mention names, but you're not only accelerating the experience for end users of enterprise applications like at Face Forward, but you're also providing similar services for at least several of the major cloud providers.
Absolutely. You know, it really is anybody that's using the cloud for delivery, whether you're a high tech or a pharma company or even a hosting provider in the cloud. They've all seen the value of ensuring that their end users are having a positive experience, and making sure, especially folks like SaaS providers. We've had a lot of interest from SaaS companies that want to ensure that they're not only able to give a positive user experience, but even from like a sales perspective, being able to demonstrate their software in other locations and in other regions is very valuable.
Sure. Now, James, when a commercial cloud provider provides a service level agreement to their customers, they need to meet it, but they also need to keep their costs as low as possible. And more enterprises are starting to behave like service providers themselves, whether it's through perhaps ITIL adoption or IT shared services or services-oriented architecture. We're certainly seeing over time movement towards a provider-supplier to consumer subscription metric of some kind, relationship of some kind. If we can use these acceleration and the ability to use the network for that requirement of performance to a certain degree, doesn't this then free up the folks who have to meet those SLAs in terms of what they need to provide? And I'm getting back to this whole consolidation issue.
Yeah, to some degree. Obviously, by using the best practices that we've adopted for a while to have blazing fast websites and applying to them to make sure that all of your applications consumed by everyone you use are still blazing fast means that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Those practices work for your website. You just apply them to more areas. So if you're applying practices you already know, then you can free up your staff to do other things to modernize the infrastructure, such as deploying ITIL more widely than you have so far, making sure that you apply virtualization to a larger percentage of your infrastructure, and then dealing with the next big issue that we see in consolidation, which is a VM sprawl, which is where you're allowing your enterprise customers, whether they're enterprise architects or developers or business units, you're allowing them to deploy new VMs much more quickly because virtualization allows you to do that, but you can quickly get out of control with too many VMs to manage. So dealing with that issue is sort of what is front and center to a lot of enterprise IT professionals right now, and if they haven't applied the best practices of performance to their application sets, to their consolidation practices, that's one more thing on their plate which they need to deal with.
Interesting. I suppose this also can relate to something that many of us are forecasting, not much of it happening yet, but this notion of a hybrid approach to cloud and sourcing, where you might use your data center up to a certain utilization, and under certain conditions where there's a spike in demand, you could just offload that to a third-party cloud provider. But if you're assured from the wide area network services that that experience is going to be the same regardless of the sourcing, they're perhaps going to be more likely to pursue such a hybrid approach. Is that fair to say, James?
Yeah, and this is a really good point that you're bringing up, and we wrote about this in a report we called Hollow Out the Moose, and moose is Forrester's term for the maintenance and ongoing operation of systems and equipment, which is basically everything you're running in your data center that hasn't yet been deployed up to this point. And the challenge most enterprises have is that moose consumes 70-80% of their entire budget, leaving very little for new innovation and new things. And they see things like cloud and they say, oh, this is great, I'll just move this stuff to the cloud and suddenly they'll save me money. No. The real answer is you need to choose the right type of solution for the right problem. And we call this strategic right sourcing. And strategic right sourcing says, take the things that others do better than you and have others do them, but know economically whether that's a positive trade-off for you or not. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a cash positive, but it has to be an opportunity cost positive. In the case of cloud computing, if I have something that I have to run myself, it's very unique to how I design it, and it's really best that I run it in my data center, you're not saving money by putting that in the cloud. If it's an application that has a lot of elasticity and you want it to have the ability to be on 2 virtual machines during the evening and scale up to as many as 50 during the day and then shrink back down to 2, that's an ideal use of cloud because cloud is all about temporary capacity being turned on. What a lot of people think is that it's about performance, and it's not. Sure, load balancing and the ability to spawn new VMs increases the performance of your application, but performance is experienced by the person at the end of the wire. And that's what has to be optimized, and that's why those types of networks are still very valuable.
Tom Winston, does this vision of this hybrid and the use of cloud for ameliorating spikes and therefore reducing your total cost, is that appealing to you?
It is, but I couldn't agree more with what James just said. It has to be for the right situation. Certainly, we've started to look at some of our applications potentially using them in a cloud environment. But right now, our critical application, the one that I mentioned earlier, it's something that we have to manage. It's a very complex environment. We manage it, and we need to kind of hold it very close to the vest. And simply by saying we can put it into the cloud because it might be easier, or there's that concept, I think, that people have that, gee, if I put it into the cloud, my life just got a lot easier. I actually think the reverse might be true, because I think you put it into the cloud and now you lose some control that you have when it's inside your four walls. And now to be able to provide the level of service you want to your customers, to some extent you lose that. So I think the cloud needs to be for the right application and for the right situation, as James mentioned. I really couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, so the cloud, not the right hammer for all nails, but for when that nail is correct, that hybrid model could perhaps be quite a economic benefit. Andy, at Akamai, are you guys looking at that hybrid model, and is there something there that your services might foster?
No, absolutely. This is really something that we're agnostic about in terms of whether it's in a data center owned by the customer, or whether it's in a hosted facility. We're all about the means of delivery. So it's delivering applications, websites, and so forth over the public internet. So it's something where we're able to do that to if there are facilities that are being used for, say, disaster recovery, whether it's hybrid scenario that you're describing. It's really for Akamai about how we're able to accelerate that, how we're able to optimize the routing, and the other protocols on the internet to make that get from wherever it's hosted to the end users, a global set of end users, and we don't care about where they are, when they are. They don't have to be on the corporate private WANs. It's really about that global reach and giving the levels of performance to actually provide an SLA. Tell me who else out there provides an SLA for delivery over the internet, and Akamai does.
All right, well, we'll have to leave it there. We've been discussing how data center consolidation and modernization can help enterprises cut costs, reduce labor, slash their energy use, become more agile, but also keeping in mind the requirements about the performance across wide area networks. We've been joined by James Staton. He's the principal analyst at Forrester Research. Thank you, James.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Andy Rubinson, senior product marketing manager at Akamai Technologies. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you very much.
And also, I really appreciate your input, Tom Winston, vice president of global technical operations at Phase Forward.
Dana, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
This is Dana Gardner, principal analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions. You've been listening to a sponsored Briefings Direct podcast. Thanks for listening, and come back next time.